Welcome to the Church of England weekly podcast. In this week's edition, we hear from Dan Finn about new resources being made available for schools, looking at the themes surrounding the Archbishop of York's pilgrimage of prayer, witness and blessing.
We decided to produce a resource that would look at pilgrimage, what pilgrimage is, but would also be focusing on these northern saints.
Professor David Wilkinson is interviewed about the launch of Scientists in Congregations earlier this month.
The way of encouraging local churches to take seriously the expertise and experience of scientists within their congregation.
And we hear from Howard, a member of the Saturday Gathering in Halifax, in the next instalment of Just Pray.
I came to faith about 8 years ago. I was in active addiction and I went into a Christian rehabilitation house in Bradford that helped young men between 21 and 30 with drug and alcohol issues.
The Archbishop of York Youth Trust and Diocese of York Education Team have come together to produce free resources for schools about Archbishop St Timothy's pilgrimage of prayer, witness and blessing across the Diocese of York. We spoke to the Director of the Youth Trust, Dan Finn, about why the resources have been produced, and he started by explaining what the Archbishop of York was undertaking.
The Archbishop is on a very special pilgrimage, a pilgrimage that he's describing as being of prayer, witness and blessing. So since the beginning of Advent in 2015, he has been walking around the entire Diocese of York, visiting all the deaneries there, and he'll be doing that all the way until Trinity in 2016. And the pilgrimage is very much inspired by a number of the northern saints. And he's just meeting people, praying, blessing what God is doing, and just being out and about, really, which is fantastic.
And so what is being released by the Archbishop of York Youth Trust and the Diocese of York Education Team?
So as a part of our work, we're very involved in working with young people in schools. We have leadership programs and things that we run, and we've got very good connections with the Diocese of York Education Team. So together, we decided to produce a resource that would look at pilgrimage, what pilgrimage is, but would also be focusing on these northern saints who have inspired the Archbishop and inspired many other people, for young people to learn about them. So specifically, this resource pack includes games and activities and lesson ideas for primary school children. In particular, there's a whole Top Trump activity all around these different faith leaders, which is really great fun for them to play. And then for secondary schools, we've produced a secondary lesson plan that looks at what pilgrimage is, the purpose of pilgrimage, and some of these inspirational people of faith as well.
Why do you think it's important for children in school to look at the idea of pilgrimage and also the northern saints?
Pilgrimage is really summed up in this idea of a journey, really. These northern saints went on some incredible journeys. The Archbishop himself now is going on an amazing journey. And I think it's really good for young people to understand that idea of a journey. We go on a journey in our lives. But more than that, specific points in our life when we can go on journeys to explore things. I think the idea of a pilgrimage also kind of is about time out, away from other things. It helps us to get a bigger global perspective to understand what's going on around us. And that's really important for young people today when they're pressured with so many different things. That idea of going on a journey and being away from things and actually having some time with God as well is brilliant. And I think in terms of these northern saints, well, we've been obviously putting the resource out to all the schools in the north and throughout the Diocese of York. And so it's great for them to find out about some of the heritage and some of the roots in terms of the Christian faith in these different saints and the amazing stories that they have and the things that they did. It's really inspirational, I think, for them on the journeys that they're on today.
How are you hoping the resources are used in schools, and I suppose can you see them being helpful in other circumstances?
Yeah, so they have been tailored for primary and first secondary schools, but there is no reason why they couldn't be used elsewhere. So we would expect them to turn up in maybe RS lessons or citizenship lessons, but there's assembly ideas, there's circle time activities and ideas and opportunities to bring in speakers. And I could definitely imagine in youth settings or in church groups or community groups, there's so much within the resource, lots of fun activities. They could take them on and use them to learn more about this pilgrimage.
And what's your favourite Top Trump Northern Saint?
I think I would go for Hilda. I think she was a remarkable lady in the way that she served people, but also in terms of the context at the time, being a woman, somebody that at that time, being in a leadership position as she was, I suppose was something that wasn't common. So she broke the mould in that sense, was a fantastic example and did amazing things for other people. So she's certainly an inspiration for me.
Finally, Dan, where can people find out more and also get their hands on these resources?
So the resources have been made available on our website, which is www.abyyt.com. You'll find them there. I do believe they're also on the links on the Archbishop of York's main website and his pilgrimage website. And lastly, if you go to the Diocese of York website, you'll also find links to the resources there as well.
Professor David Wilkinson, a professor in the Department of Theology and Religion at Durham University and a co-director of the project about scientists in congregations, spoke to us about how churches can apply for grants of up to £10,000 to fund innovative projects fostering a better understanding between science and faith. The scheme is part of a groundbreaking three-year project on science and faith run by Durham University in partnership with the Church of England. David began by explaining what the project was about.
Scientists and Congregations has been working as a concept in both the States and in Scotland for the last few years, and we've been able to bring it now to the rest of the UK as a way of encouraging local churches to take seriously the expertise and experience of scientists within their congregation. And the simple idea is that local churches, working with professional scientists, can think of something to do that would enrich their own program of Christian education, ministry or mission, or to do something on behalf of the community in exploring the exciting area of science and faith.
Who can apply and how do they go about it?
Everyone can apply. There's no denominational bias to this, so it's open to Methodists, Baptists, Anglicans, Free Churches, Roman Catholics, any church community. And the thing that's important is to see it as a partnership between a local church and scientists. Now, this may be local science teachers. It may be professors in local universities who are part of the congregation, or at least have sympathy with exploring some of the big questions of science and religion in a wider form. But it is important that there's this partnership between the church and someone with a background and a passion and a commitment to science.
If you're a church leader who's interested in taking part and you don't have a scientist in your congregation, could you team up with another church?
Yes, you could. And certainly groups of churches might be the way forward on this. When we talk about a local church, that could be defined in lots of different ways. It might be, of course, that just as many ecumenical projects have found a focus in hosting a series of lectures, for example. So a group of churches in a particular place might want to join together to think about a series of schools events or a series of public lectures or workshops or even exhibitions in different of their churches. It might be that a local Methodist circuit or a deanery or even, we could say, a diocese or a district could join together to do a project that would serve a whole number of churches. As long as this partnership involves professional scientists, then I think people can be imaginative and say, how best can we use the structures that we already have to create an imaginative project?
My understanding is that the professional scientists have to come from within the congregations.
They have to be attached to the congregation. There are a number of scientists who work in Durham University, where I'm working, who wouldn't call themselves Christians, but would have sympathy with working together with Christians to explore these big questions. And so we don't want to be restrictive. We want a connection within to a church or a sympathy to a church, a willingness to work on the project with a church is more than enough, and actually could be very creative in its own right.
I see you can bid for up to £10,000, but do you have to make such a big bid?
Yes, the maximum amount is £10,000, and that allows you to do quite a big scheme. But we'd also want to encourage small schemes, maybe a few hundred pounds, that allow the buying of resources for an event for children, for example, or a few hundred pounds to put on a question and answer session in a local pub. These are projects which might be pilot projects for something that comes later. So, for example, if you've never done a question and answer session in a local pub like the one I was doing just a few weeks ago, to take the risk of doing that, you might need a little bit of finance to see whether it works or not. Once you do the first one and find that it works, often the finance will follow on as people know that it's a good event and pay for it themselves. So this is very much encouraging people to take the risk of doing something new, of seeing whether it works or not. And then hopefully, once it does work, then they won't need the initial startup finance.
My understanding is this isn't just about biology, physics and chemistry as well. This goes to a much wider field than people might imagine.
Very much so. Now, you've got to remember that I'm a physicist and I'm very narrow in my view. The famous physicist Ernest Rutherford said that all of science is simply physics and stamp collecting. And those of us who are physicists need to recognize that some of the interesting science that's been done today is in areas such as psychology and neuroscience. The relationship between mind and brain and how we understand the self is probably the bigger area of dialogue between science and religion today than even things like the Big Bang and the origin of the universe. And so we don't want to just limit this to what we might call the age-old questions of science and religion, the origin of the universe or evolution. We want to find new and important ways of exploring these questions. I was talking to a group of pastors from a Pentecostal church just yesterday, and one of them said to me that he'd studied artificial intelligence at MA level. That's a very significant move within science today. What does it mean to be human in the midst of artificial intelligence? And I was trying to encourage him to say this is a really important issue to explore with his congregation and indeed with other Christians so that we can benefit from his understanding of what it means to be human in a world of AI.
There are people who will say, there you are, a professor at Durham University with two PhDs, one in astrophysics and the other in theology. Isn't this all about projects for very brainy people?
No, I think what I'm fascinated about is the hunger, both within those inside the church and those outside the church, for engaging with these big questions. The big questions of what it means to be human, of where does the universe come from, of where do we get hope in the world. These are the kind of questions that I encounter in young people who are studying science at school, in folk who are watching television programs presented by Brian Cox or David Attenborough. These are the kind of questions that are asked down the pub over a drink. They're the kind of questions that often are encapsulated in popular culture, in television, in movies. Now, I think part of this project is to use the resources of those of us who've done a bit of study in Christian theology and in science to help others as they think through these questions, not to give trite or very unintelligible answers, but actually to engage in questioning with people. Because actually, you may have two PhDs, but these questions still intrigue me. These questions still excite me. These questions still find me puzzled and searching. And I think the whole project is about partnership between those who've got expertise and experience in these areas and those who want to ask the questions with them.
Are you able to give any examples of some successful projects?
There are a number of successful projects which you'll find on the website. And just to give you one or two glimpses into some of the things that could be done, one of our colleagues in the Baptist Union, Dave Gregory, does messy science as part of his messy church work. This is a way of talking about the excitement and wonder of science with young children, alongside all of the craft activities that Messy Church has become famous for. He has scientific experiments which allow children to see science as a gift from God. Of course, there are other projects which have been much more aimed at an older audience, with question and answer sessions where, or Grilla Scientist, or Grilla Scientist who happens to be a Christian, where there's an open agenda, and one or two scientists will open themselves to be questioned, either in an informal setting of a pub or even in times of worship, where question and answer can open up some of these big questions. Then I think there's those churches which have opened up the church's exhibition space and established scientific exhibitions within the space of the church, either in working with local artists to provide sculptures or paintings, or by actually having scientific experiments as an open day in the church where people can come and participate in fun experiments or in, again, discussion areas. And then there's those projects which have actually gone outside the church and maybe sponsored a day conference in a school, where the church has paid the expenses of some guest speakers, but done it for a local school to engage with these questions. So there's a rich variety of things which go beyond the normal, let's put on a series of Lenten lectures type scenario. And we want to encourage an amount of imagination in finding new ways to talk about these questions.
Finally, can you explain why this is so important?
This is part of a project where we're trying to engage the church to see science as a gift rather than to be afraid of it. And we're doing a big project funded by the Templeton World Charitable Foundation to research attitudes amongst clergy towards science, to help senior church leaders such as bishops catch up and have confidence with cutting-edge science. And then to encourage local churches to engage with science. Too often, the church has either been seen to be silent on science or to be fearful or negative or critical about science. The reality is that most churches will have scientists within their congregations, science teachers, science students, science professionals. And part of this is to affirm their role as scientists who are Christians, to say that to be a scientist is a Christian calling. We want to celebrate that, and we want to use the expertise in mission and ministry and education.
And to learn more about the project, you can visit community.dur.ac.uk/christianleadership.science. Finally, this week, we hear from another member of the Saturday Gathering, Fresh Expression of Church, based in Halifax, as part of our Easter Just Pray series. Howard found God after struggling with an addiction to drugs and talks about his journey.
I got released from prison last year. I'm from Bradford originally. Kind of all my active addiction were played out in Bradford. So I were offered a new opportunity to come to Halifax. So I came to Halifax and then looking for a church to plug into. And were just made aware of this and kind of been coming on a Saturday evening since, really. I came to faith about 8 years ago. I was in active addiction and I went into a Christian rehabilitation house in Bradford that helped young men between 21 and 30 with drug and alcohol issues, which were a part of a church on the way in Bradford. And it was from there I found my faith, really. Kind of a real strong Christian leadership within the house, and then obviously a stone throw out of the back door with a church site, so kind of morning prayers, really, withdrawing from heroin and methadone, not being able to sleep, just found myself being drawn up to a prayer meeting at 6 o'clock each morning with the elders and the pastors of the church. We had a prayer meeting every day, every morning of the week for men, so I kind of plugged in to that and went and received prayer and prayed myself. And then it was just a natural progression, kind of just being led by the Spirit, really, to one night there were a conference and there were an invitation to accept Jesus into my life. You know, the gospel were preached, really. And it was at that point that I realised that my depravity and how lost I was. And in my eyes, there was only one way out, and that was through Jesus. And it's been an exciting ride ever since. Downs and lows, but it's been great. It was a challenge, really, because I wanted to get out of my seat, but there was a force trying to keep me in my seat. So it was a battle being able to get up from my chair and then walk to the front and be led in the sinner's prayer. So it was kind of, you know, everything's going on. Your head's racing, your heart's racing, you're sweating, you try to get up, but you can't. And then, you know, the next minute, I'm up front. Carried on, I was discipled for a short time. I was baptised. The day I was baptised, I went to my baptism service, I was baptised. I'd been clean for about 8 months. I had my baptism, and then in the afternoon, I used drugs again after 8 months. As I see it, it was just like Jesus. You know, when John the Baptist baptised him, and then he came up and then he was led straight into the wilderness and he was tempted by the devil. Unfortunately for me, I believe I had a similar experience, but the flesh got the better of me. You know, for me, the minute I made that commitment, you know, I believe I engaged in warfare like I'd never realised before. On one hand, I realised there were a God who loved me and died for my sins, and there were an Holy Spirit that he sent to comfort me. But naturally, through my progression of faith, I realised that there's a roaring adversary as well, there's a real devil. And I had to really work that stuff out for myself, because it's not something that's often preached from the front. Strong messages on the devil and his ways, and, you know, how we can really, you know, destroy us and kind of lead us in the opposite way of what God would want to lead us. I think I doubt when I'm led by the flesh. When I'm walking in the Spirit, as hard as it is, I tend to be able to overcome a lot of those things. The doubts don't seem to have as much effect as they would if I'm kind of just being carnal about things and being fleshy about things. So for me, it's about what standpoint am I coming from? You know, am I being led by the Spirit, or am I running on self-will? If I'm running on self-will, then I find that, you know, doubt cripples me, you know, really does. It's when I start doubting it, you know, it quickly isolates me. It quickly can draw me out of fellowship, can stop me praying, can stop me reading my word, can stop me praising and thanking God for all he's done in my life. Again, it's a natural, so much like fear, doubt, you know, class it in the same group. And it's tough to doubt. And even, you know, when we get a strong message from the scriptures telling us not to doubt, then we're human, you know. And that's another thing I've come to realise as a Christian. You know, I am infilled with the Holy Spirit, but I am human as well. And those things like fear and doubt, you know, they're all human emotions at times. And it's just, you know, at times just accepting that, you know, I'm human. And I do doubt, and, you know, I do get frightened of things. As scripture tells, it's having hope in the unseen, but it's kind of, you know, it's going through that process and, you know, and going through that valley. It's hard because, you know, I think, you know, through day, you have different levels of faith, don't you? I've been with a friend today who's just, he's a Christian, and his marriage has ended for 10 years. Early this morning, he had complete faith that God were going to see him through it. And then by the time we'd had his dinner this afternoon, he was in complete disarray. And that dark cloud had come back over his head, and he was in a place where only 2 hours before he'd fought that he'd got victory. So it was an ongoing, it's like tug of war. You know, it's like, you know, faith for me, it's like tug of war. It's 1 minute walking in faith, and then next minute, you know, there's a black cloud over you. You're engaging in spiritual warfare because it's on you. You know, you've taken it. You know, there's been a fiery dart that's got in, that's causing you to be discouraged, causing you to doubt, and then it's wrestling through that and kind of being able to get it out of the way and say, no, I'm going to have faith again. I don't see how someone can have absolute 100% faith, because we're tossed to and fro, even though we're told not to be tossed to and fro. I'm just human, and I've got human emotions, and I think they play a lot in it. Unless you're absolutely total dead and you don't have any emotions, I find it hard where you don't go back and forth. What would I be without faith? I'd be dead a long time ago, I believe, yeah, absolutely, I'd be dead. Not just spiritually, but probably physically dead in a box somewhere. Faith's everything to me. It keeps me going, gives me hope. I dread to think where I'd be without faith. I'd be on a fast track to hell, that's where I'd be. That's where I'd be going, you know, hellbound, on a fast train.
You can watch Howard's teaser film online at www.justpray.uk. That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @C_of_E and like our Facebook page to stay up to date with the news during the week. Thanks for listening.